welcome everyone to the John Kirkland Show. I'm glad you were able to join me for the end of the year. This has been a crazy, crazy year just in sports in general. We've seen so many like upsets and so many, you know, fights lost, and it's just crazy how, you know, when you compete at such a high level, how things turn out, you know, decisively, you know, wins versus losses, so to speak. One of the things I want to get to, this show is just going to be strictly about the NFL, period. I'm not talking about anything else. I'm talking about the NFL because it's just wacky to me right now. It's just unbelievable. You got bubble teams. You got people who already are in the playoffs. You got some that are not. And these last 2 weeks will really decide on whether or not who's in, who's out, so on and so forth. And I'm going to break all of that down in a moment. But one of the key games to me that got my attention at this moment in time is the Arizona Cardinals and Dallas Cowboys. Now, Dallas Cowboys had an impressive game last week against the Washington football team, who was banged up, hurt, whatever their situation was. We whooped them, no doubt about it. But defensively, we looked really, really good. Hopefully, we can have the same intensity, the same, you know, drive defensively against the Cardinals, because I think this will be a big test for us to see whether or not we can really compete with one of the top four playoff teams, whether it be the Rams, Arizona, whether it be Tampa Bay or Green Bay. This will definitely solidify if we can just it'll solidify if we're competitive or not. What I looked at is I looked at where Arizona is defensively, and Arizona gives up a whole lot more, and they have in the last five games, they've given up a lot more than they've scored. So in the last five games, they've given up 23 points a game, but offensively they score 21 points a game. So obviously 23 is bigger than 21. So defensively, that's where the 23 points a game comes from, is where they're at defensively. And then offensively, they have 21 points a game, which to me, it's going to take a whole lot more than that to beat a Green Bay Packers team, to beat a Tampa Bay team. It's going to take more than that. So in the last five games, Arizona hasn't looked very good. However, when you look at Dallas has only given up 18 points per game in the last four out of their last five ball games. They've only given up 18.6 a game. Dallas has scored 32.8 points per game offensively. Right now, on paper, if you're just going to judge by the last five games, statistically, Dallas right now is the better football team. And Dallas is expected to beat Arizona upon if we can continue the way we played the last four out of the last five games. So if we can continue to do that, I think Dallas has a great chance in beating Arizona and maybe potentially getting that number one seed if possible, which to me is big for Dallas because we've had that losing season. We have consecutive losing seasons. So I feel like we're going to be back in the thick of things if we're able to get that number one seed. I think we will establish ourselves in the NFC as the team that, hey, you know, we can compete with the Tom Brady's and the Aaron Rodgers. Just looking at the playoff standings, right now, Green Bay's 12-3, and they're at home, which is the Sunday night game, against Minnesota. Now, Minnesota is one of the bubble teams, meaning if Minnesota wins, they'll be an 8-8 football team. Now, does that qualify to get you in is the question. But they got to win to find out. If not, then again, it's going to be the same song and dance for Green Bay, it's going to be the same song and dance for them in terms of them being 13-3 like they've always been. They've always been a 13-3 team. And then they get to the NFC Championship game and they get smoked. So it to me, history is just repeating itself until I see that they can go back and finally win some sort of an NFC championship, at least get to the Super Bowl. I think that they have what it takes to get to the Super Bowl. I just think that their running game is pathetic. They don't run the ball, which is why I feel they won't win the Super Bowl. But hey, at the rate they're going, looks like they'll get there. The Cowboys are 11-4, the Rams are 11-4, and Tampa is 11-4. Now the Cowboys host the Cards. That game is be on Fox. It's a 1:25 start. The Rams are on the road against the Ravens. It's a must-win for the Ravens. The Ravens have to win that. The Ravens are also 8-7. That game can be seen on Fox at 10 a.m. Tampa Bay at the Jets. The Jets are 4-11. We're pretty much looking at Tampa Bay probably going on to be 12-4. But Tampa Bay needs, Green Bay has to lose. I think has to lose for the Cowboys, Rams, and Tampa Bay to potentially eclipse Green Bay for the number one seed. Possibly that could happen. Arizona's 10-5. Again, they're on the road, taking on the 11-4 Cowboys. The 49ers will be at home, and they're taking on the Texans. That game will be on CBS for the 49er fans. And then the Eagles are on the road against a banged-up Washington team who is currently 6-9 record. Now the bubble teams in the NFC is Minnesota at 7-8. They're on the road against Green Bay. The number 9 team, Atlanta, they're 7-8. They're on the road against the Bills. And the number 10 team at 7-8 as well will be the New Orleans Saints who host the Panthers. And that game will be on Fox. It'll be a 1:25 start. Now with the AFC. The AFC has Kansas City. They're on the road against the Bengals. Their Bengals are 9-6, and that's going to be a very good game as well. But the pressure, I think, is more on the Bengals to win, maybe get that 10-6 mark. I think they need to win to secure that playoff spot that they're trying to get. But I think if they lose, they will go 9-7, which potentially could be difficult to get in. Tennessee will host the Dolphins. Cincinnati again will host KC. Buffalo will host the Falcons. Indy will host the Raiders. And then the New England will host the Jags. And Miami, like I said, Tennessee will host the Dolphins. Oh, no, Tennessee will be at the Dolphins, rather. And then the bubble teams are the Ravens, Chargers, and Raiders. All three of them are 8-7. So again, the Ravens will host the Rams, the Chargers will host the Broncos, and the Raiders will be on the road against a 9-6 Colts team who also needs a victory. Those are your games this weekend that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to seeing all those games and seeing at the end where we stack up after the new year. Top 10 offenses. Dallas is number one, Tampa Bay is two, KC is three, the Chargers is four, Ravens is five, the Bills is six, seven is Rams, eight is the Cardinals, nine is Minnesota, and 10 is the 49ers. Top 10 offenses in the league right now, as we stand, as we're talking right now. Top 10 defenses. The Bills at one, the Panthers at two, Patriots at three, 49ers at four, the Eagles at five, Denver at six, Cleveland at seven, Cardinals at eight, Bears at nine, and Tampa Bay rounds out at 10. Now, I took the time out and I took the liberty to make some things clear because a lot of people, like I said earlier, in my podcast, like I was talking about, was the Green Bay Packers and the reality that they think they can win without the running game, which to me just is mind-boggling that people still feel like they can beat these teams. when I look at Green Bay's defense, they're number 11 ranked, and then Green Bay's offense is ranked number 15. If you think about it, rushing wise, as a team, they only average 106 yards a game, along with 1604 total rushing yards. Aaron Jones only has 723 yards rushing, along with AJ Dillon at 677. Jones has four touchdowns and Dillon has three, so a combined seven rushing touchdowns for the year. To me, they should have way more touchdowns than that. However, when you're looking at rushing teams that run the ball better than Green Bay, you got to look at what, to me, what's embarrassing. This is like an embarrassing stat to me, especially when you're talking about the Super Bowl, is right now, the team that runs the ball better than Green Bay right now is Seattle. Seattle has the fourth worst offense in the league, and they run the ball better than Green Bay. Carolina has the fifth worst offense in the league, and they run the ball better than the Packers. However, defensively, might I add, is that Carolina does have the number two defense in the NFL as well. So they're not too far. They just had a bad year. Out of 15 games, they only won five, but so did Seattle. However, right now the 49ers are trying to clinch a playoff berth. And let me add that the 49ers lost to Seahawks twice, lost to Seattle twice this season. Let me add that for those that are listening and you know, they're getting a little snippy. The Chargers, they have the fourth best offense, so I won't count them. The Chiefs are next, I won't count them. But I will count Detroit. Detroit has the 10th worst offense in all of football. The Saints have the second worst offense in all of football. Now remember, all these teams that I'm talking about are all the teams that run the ball better than the Packers. And to me, they have to be able to establish a run if they're going to play the Rams, if they're going to play Arizona, who they've already beaten. But my problem is that you can't run the ball 11 times for 53 yards and think that's going to be enough to beat teams. I don't think it's enough to beat Dallas. I don't think it's enough to beat Dallas, not with Dallas's improved defense. Not with 53 yards rushing. Not with three, not with 53 yards rushing. But that's why in the stat column you see Aaron Rodgers, four touchdowns, 300-400 yards. And it's sad that he has to throw that much to win the ball game. So he's already thrown for 28 points in the midst of over 300 and something yards, because they don't run the ball efficiently. They don't. Which is pretty sad to me. And then when you're talking about in the last five games, right now, the Packers have they're the 21st, they're 21st in the league in rushing. 21st in the league. That to me, that's not good enough. It's not good enough at all. It's horrible. Hopefully Green Bay can get it together between now and playoffs, because what I just read you, that is not going to get it. Now I want to also talk about this too, because somebody was saying, I was reading in my news feed on social media where a guy was saying how the NFC East is weak. I want to talk about that, okay? And the NFC East is really not weak. Okay, because, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because right now, out of the four teams that are in the NFC East, guess what? Philadelphia has a potential chance of making the playoffs, and the Cowboys have already made the playoffs. But when you look at the NFC North, the Green Bay Packers are probably gonna be the only team that makes it. When you look at the NFC South, Tampa Bay is the only team that's gonna make it. So when you're talking about conferences that are not very good, I just gave you two different conferences that are not very good. When you only have one playoff team making it out of the conference, how is the NFC East weak? How is the NFC East weak when the North and South only have one team coming out? That doesn't make any sense. Not to me. So the person who said it, they're Niners fans. They're Niners fans. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that how is the NFC West that good of a division when Arizona is struggling? The Rams had a real iffy year. So how is that? We know Seattle's not going to make it. We know the 49ers are borderline, and we know the Rams, and we know the Arizona's in there. So they only have two teams that really qualify, basically. That we know for sure. We're not talking about bubble teams, but I'm saying what we know for sure, what we know for certain right now. But speaking of the 49ers, I'm not a big 49ers fan. I never have been, never will be. But I will say this. I was real critical of Jimmy G coming into the season because I just didn't feel he was the guy that could lead to lead the football team. But right now, I see differently. And I see differently because of the consistency that he has shown throughout the season. In the last 14, 15 games, he's shown consistency. And I don't see, and prior to the Tennessee game that the 49ers recently lost, they came into the game defensively with 17 points, giving up 17 points a game in the last five games. So winning the last four out of five, they won four out of five with a defense only allowing 17 points a game. 17 points a game. And right now, they are a top five defense in the league. However, the point is, Jimmy G, to me, has shown that he can lead the 49ers. As of right now, I still don't think Trey Lance is ready to go. I don't think so. I think whatever we were thinking, whatever we thought, whatever the case is, whatever the argument is, whether people feel he can play, where people don't think he can play, whatever the case is, I'll tell you this. We will find out on Sunday when they play the Texans. We will find out what Trey Lance is all about for four quarters. Our questions will be answered. I can tell you that right now. Our questions will be answered going forward on Sunday when they play the Texans. We'll see. And it's a home game, so I have no doubt that he's going to be ready to go. We're going to see, his running ability, his passing ability, his mobility as a quarterback that the 49ers haven't had since Kaepernick. So I'm looking to see a QB who hasn't played, too often get an NFL start where it's on him for four quarters. We're gonna see. That's gonna be very interesting to me. And also, you got to give a lot of credit to Kyle Shanahan, and just the remarkable work he's done with the 49ers because they were banged up. They had a lot of injuries. I mean, they were going into games. You didn't know who their running back was. You didn't know who their running back was. They haven't had a legit starting running back since what was it, Sermon? Since Sermon's been out. They haven't had a legitimate running back. Who is their back? We don't know because they're so banged up. I think Ayuk, he's nice. But Deebo Samuel, oh man, top five receiver in the league. Oh man. I tell you what, they're gonna have to park that Brinks truck in front of his house. Cause that boy gonna get paid. That's a bad boy, man. I mean, when you have a guy with his athleticism, a guy that can turn on the jets at any point in time. At any point in time. I mean, he could be running back, receiver, whatever you want him to do, he does it. And I mean, oh man, I that's a bad boy. I can't say enough about Debo and what he's done this season. There's a lot of receivers that flew under the radar that were top 5,000-yard receivers, but Debo, to me, I just feel like if he's not on the field, you kind of take the air out the offense. Debo's a huge part of that offense. George Kittle, to me, I had this argument about George Kittle. People saying that he's one of the he's a top three tight end in the league. To me, I feel like at number one, the top tight end, and this is just my personal opinion. I would say Kittle is top three, for sure, for sure. I think he's top three. I know I'm missing somebody, but I would say right here is a realistic. I think I would say top four. My top four tight ends right now. Matter of fact, let's do top five. Screw it. Let's just do top five. I would say at number one right now, you have to have Travis Kelce at number one. Okay, he's the most athletic tight end in the league right now. You got to have Travis Kelce at number one. At number two, I would have Mark Andrews, tight end from Baltimore. I think he's balling out right now. He's a huge part of their offense. I mean, homeboy's balling out. Number three, of course, George Kittle. George Kittle is he's balling as well. But at number four, here's a tricky one. Here's a tricky one. I think that's gonna blow everybody away, and that's Zach Ertz. I like Zach Ertz. I think just what he's been able to do with the Cardinals in terms of making them a deep threat, even on the short ball, short throws, the yardage he's able to pick up on just inside slants, from the right side. And his ability to block. I think there's a lot of blocking tight ends that it's just it isn't there. There is just the blocking is just not there. So definitely Zach Ertz is there. I would say at number five, and this is just fair because the reason why I got him at number five is because anytime this man steps on the field, we know what he can do. We already know, and he does not disappoint. And that's Gronkowski at number five. You got to give it to him. Gronkowski, just he's a game changer with Tampa Bay, and I think he doesn't get the credit that he's due, especially a guy who retired and then came back to football. So I like Gronkowski. I like what he does, and I like how efficient and consistent that he makes the Tampa Bay offense. And then also. Here was a big question that somebody asked me a couple of days ago, and they said, "John, Jacksonville is 2-13. As of right now, they're 2-13. What do you think went wrong?" And I said, "Well, let's see. Number one, you hired a college coach." Urban Meyer is one of the greatest college coaches I've seen in a long time. He's won everywhere he's went, whether it be Utah, Ohio State, Florida, the list goes on. He's a winner. There's no doubt about it. I'm not going to take that. What I'm not going to do is discredit what he's done in the college world of football, where I'm just not going to do that. Now, the NFL obviously is a different beast in itself. And I think that Urban Meyer didn't have the right staff around him. He didn't have the right staff around him. That's number one. Number two, he was not focused on coaching or he was not focused on football because you don't get caught up in these scandals if you're focused on football. If you're focused on making your football team better, you don't get caught up in nonsense. There's just no time for it. There's no room for it. So I think for Urban Meyer, it just wasn't the right time, and he was not the right fit for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, going forward, he's fired, they moved on, so on and so forth. Now, The one thing I would say going into the 2022 season is that the one thing that Jacksonville has to do is assess the roster. They have to assess the roster, and they have to look at it from this standpoint: productivity. So obviously, you have Trevor Lawrence, who is not having a stellar year. He has more interceptions than he does touchdowns, but he has 32-25 for a 58% passing rating for 9 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. He threw for 309 three he threw for 319 out of 405 out of 543 attempts. He threw 319 passes. I don't know how you rate that for a first-year quarterback with no offensive line, no weapons. You really don't have any weapons. Their biggest weapon was James Robinson and Marvin Jones, who actually had 64 catches for 698 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's not going to get it. Unfortunately, that's not going to get it. James Robinson, 767 rushing yards for 8 touchdowns, 4.7 yards a carry. I think that's probably the most productive player on the Jaguars team right now, and he's out for the season. So I think for the Jaguars is you have to establish Robinson as your starter, but then you got to get a veteran back that can come in and that can support that running game as well. And I think if they can do that, if they can solidify that, I think their running game can get back on track because they have a solid running back in James Robinson there. I think what they need to start doing also is establishing a receiving core. They need a receiving core, and I think they still need a solid tight end. A solid tight end. They need that. They need a guy who can block and that can catch. They need that. They can find that. Now we're cooking. Now we're putting the pieces together. Another reason why they went 2-13 is because they have $85.6 million committed to their offense when they have a 27th ranked offense in the league. That's a lot of money committed to your offense when you're only in what? There's only 32 teams in the league and you're 27. That's not very good at all. But their defense is ranked in the top 20, but they're committed to 71.3. They're committed to 71.3. Their defense is. That's a lot just to be at 20. That's a lot to be at for 20. So I think number one, and I'm gonna say this as a I'm gonna put my GM mind on for a second. I'm gonna give everybody some education here. Is first of all, as an organization in Jacksonville, I think his name is Tony Khan. Khan has to take responsibility. All right. He has to take responsibility in the sense that he hired a college coach and you knew he couldn't coach that team. Every year, Jacksonville is rebuilding. It's not like they solidified themselves in the AFC. They have pieces and they're just adding those pieces together, or they're adding pieces to the team that they're trying to assemble. So you have Trevor Lawrence as your future. You got James Robinson here. Now you need receivers, you need tight ends, you need offensive line. There's anybody who takes this job as a head coach, you have your work cut out because that team needs a lot from top to bottom. But back to Tony Khan. Tony Khan has to take responsibility for the fact that you hired a college coach. That's number one. Number two, you need to take responsibility in the fact that you drafted Trevor Lawrence, number one overall, but you didn't put anything with him. You didn't add any offensive line. You didn't add any weapons that he could throw to. You gave him nothing. And then you're upset because he has 9 touchdown passes for 14 interceptions. He has that because he has no receivers. He has that because there's no protection. There's no protection at all. Their biggest win, they beat the Bills at home,
And then they went on to lose 7 consecutive football games prior to today. So when you look at these things statistically, Tony Khan is to blame. And people within that organization is to blame. So now you say, well, we understand that. What do we do now going forward? Well, I'm going to tell you what you do now going forward. Next year, going into the 2022 league year, you have $69.2 million in cap space. You have multiple draft picks. So you're back to square one again, where you have money and draft picks. What do you do? What do you do with the money and draft picks to improve this 2-13 record? The 2-13 record is not Urban Meyer's fault. The 2-13 record is certainly not Trevor Lawrence's fault. The 2-13 record is the lack of commitment from the organization to say, hey, we are committed to winning. We need to put the best 53 men on the field every Sunday, and we have to commit to their growth, their development, and being competitive every single Sunday. And we are trying to build a championship team here in Jacksonville, and that is the problem. That's why they're 2-13. That's why. Just explain it to you. And I'm talking about Jacksonville because The bottom line is, as an organization, and organizations are quick to blame the coach. No, blame yourself, because you lost just like that coach did. The only thing you brought Urban Meyer on for is to sell tickets. That's it. Let's be clear, with all the coaches that's out there, you're telling me Urban Meyer was a better candidate than all of them? What else would you do? Why else would you hire a college coach? Why else would you hire a college coach other than selling tickets? He's not going to sell you any tickets, because nobody's coming to see Urban Meyer. Trevor Lawrence is, people not coming to see Trevor Lawrence. You've got to, in order to put, you know, people in the seats, you have to win. You have to be competitive. That's how you get people to come to your games. But hopefully, with Trevor Lawrence, and they build around Trevor Lawrence, hopefully that can happen. By the way, Tony Khan is a really, really good businessman. Let me be clear about that. Football, it's iffy with me. But just on the purest sense of business, oh, Tony Khan, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He's made some good, smart business investments. Let's be clear right now. You know, I'm not going to dog Tony Khan, but I'm just saying, as far as from a football standpoint, you need to get a GM that's committed to winning. You got to get a GM that says, hey, this is where we were this year. This is my commitment this year, next year. So if we went 2-13 this year, we only won 2 games. Next year, we got to win 6. So you figure year 2, you won 4 more games than you did in year 1, which to me is growth. So now you're in your third year. You say, okay, well, we won 2 games in our first year. We won 6 in the second year. Now in the third year of this rebuild, I'm looking to win 9 or 10 games. Now, what does 9 or 10 games give you? Playoff berth. So now, in 3 short years, you've improved this football team by a massive 4 to 5 wins per season. To me, that's how you get it done. But the commitment starts from the top. It starts from the top. It does not start with the coach. It does not start with the lack of productivity with your players, because the players only give them what you push them to do, or what you drive them to do. So if your expectation is, hey, go out there and catch, I don't know, give me about 5 or 6 catches. We're not worried about yardage. We're not worried about if you're going to score a touchdown or not. Just give me 5 or 6 catches a game. To them, that's productivity. To me, it's not. I'll take your 4 or five catches a game. However, I need you to block because I need Robinson. He has to be a 1,000-yard rusher in terms of my offense producing and getting better. I need an offensive line. I think they got their center in the last year of their deal. He's in the last year of his deal. So I don't think they can afford to lose a center. But this is why the draft is so important. This is why the number one overall pick is so important, is because you've got to get you the best lineman on the board. Trade down, get an additional pick, but then also get the best line. You could probably still get the best lineman on the board by trading down and getting an additional pick and probably getting, because you don't need a quarterback. So what do you need the number one pick for? You're not going to draft a receiver. What do you need the number one pick for? If I'm the Jaguars, I'm trading down, okay? Because I have multiple first-round picks, and I have, probably I'm going to have more than $70 million in cap space. So you're telling me I can't go out there and get a Davante Adams and offer him a massive contract? Because he's going to command anywhere between $25 and $28 million a year. You mean to tell me I can't go out there and get, there's another receiver that I know I'm missing. Can't think of his name at the moment, but there's going to be receivers out there. Oh, I'm sorry. The guy from Tampa Bay. I'm sorry. I can't think of his name at the moment, but he's hurt. He tore his ACL. But the point is that that's what sometimes you have to spend a little money and build around the money that you spend. So when you're able to do that, now you're piecing the puzzle up. And so all these high contracts, put it on the trade block and see what you get. You're not going to always get a first round pick. I want people to understand that. You're not going to always get a first round pick. The reason why you're not going to always get a first round pick is because of what the other team think the player that you're trading is really worth. You're not going to give me an offensive tackle who can't block, but his cap number is $17.5 million. But you want a first round pick. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'll take a fourth or a fifth round pick. Sure. I'll give you that. But not at $17.5 million a year. It's not going to happen. So that's where teams don't realize, okay, I'll put them on the block and let me see what I can get for him. The key is get something for him. So not only that you establish the draft pick, but now you have some cap space for the following year. So you can go out there and start building this team and getting better with maybe bring in a superstar or two because you have the money to do so. However, you got a young core that you've been building around in order for that superstar to be successful. That's just what I think with Jacksonville and what they need to do to get better. They have to get better, but it starts with their front office. Before I end this segment, I want everyone to have a Merry Christmas. I know I'm late on that, but Merry Christmas and a happy New Year. Be safe. Whatever you guys do, I know everybody's gonna be partying, drinking, having a great time. Listen, whatever you do, do not drink and drive. Whatever you do, do not drink and drive. If you have your phone, call an Uber. If the Uber is $100, $200, let me tell you personally, that is going to be nothing compared to what you would pay if you get a DUI. You're going to pay thousands of dollars, and then you're going to think to yourself, I wish I would have paid that $200, $100 Uber. So my advice to everyone, please, whatever you do, do not drink and drive. You want to be here for your loved ones, because if you drink and drive, you could hurt yourself or hurt someone else, and it's just a complete nightmare. And I don't wish that on my worst enemy. You don't want that. So again, ladies and gentlemen, please do not drink and drive, whatever you do. Real quick before I prepare to go into this new year, and we will be back on next Wednesday night, and we will be in the new year next Wednesday night, is we had a draft, and with Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones, sorry, I don't know why I keep calling Mark, but it's Mac Jones, And anyone who's talked to me about the draft at that moment in time, I said, I wanted Mac Jones. So I know the 49ers had the 3 pick and they ended up taking Trey Lance instead of Mac Jones. Mac Jones right now is the most productive quarterback out of all 4 quarterbacks that were taken above him. He's thrown for 67% of his passes, and he's the only, well, Trevor, him and Trevor Lawrence are the only 2 quarterbacks in that draft that have thrown for well over 3,000 yards. However, right now, Trevor Lawrence has the most interceptions out of the 5, and Mac Jones has the most touchdowns out of the 5. But it's not to say, you know, Wilson can't get better. It's not to say Fields can't get better, which I think in year 2, we will see a lot more improvement from Wilson, Fields, and even Trevor Lawrence, and perhaps maybe Trey Lance. Maybe Trey Lance. And that's who I'm going to zero in on Sunday. What can Trey Lance do? But overall, I felt Mac Jones was the better quarterback out of all of them. Just what he did at Alabama just in one season. Just in one season. So imagine what he could have done in 4 years had he been the 4-year starter. So anyway, I would like to thank everybody who took the time out to join me on my podcast, The John Kirkland Show. And again, we will be back on next Wednesday night. Tune in. I got a lot to talk about. There is so much going on in the boxing world that I'm going to touch on. And then also, I'm going to talk about each week. I'm also going to talk about the struggling franchises. What do they need to do to get better? And we're going to talk about cap space and, you know, cutting players before June 1st and where do they stand amongst the draft and all those great things. So each week will be a team that I will talk about, whether it be the Jets, the Lions, or whoever. I've already discussed with you guys tonight. Tonight you have the treat of having me talking about the Jaguars and listening to this podcast about the finances of these players and these franchises really give you the education aspect of it and just what it takes to really build a football team. So tune in next week. We'll do the Detroit Lions next week. Tune in. Everyone have a safe, fun holiday, and we will see you again next week.